it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to pass, plenty of time. Looking down the right sideline for Hopkins, who pulls it in one-handed for the touchdown. Jackson under center, I formation. Handoff goes to Henry through a hole on the left side into the secondary, and he's down the sideline, and he just out-angled Taylor Rapp, and it is a touchdown.
Don't call it a comeback.
Allen has time. Now pressure coming from Van Noy. Throws, it's high, and it's caught in the end zone by Keon Coleman. It may have been intended for Dawson Knox, but Coleman's the one that ends up with it. Gonna hand it off to Henry, and he's bottled up. The ball is out! It's loose! Who's got the football? It's Buffalo ball! Here's the snap. Four-man rush. Allen back to pass. Looking over the middle. He's got Hawes, who pulls it in and is down to the one-yard line. And Allen reaches over the goal line, and he is in. Allen fires down the left side. He's got Palmer at the 40 and out of bounds at the 40-35 in Baltimore territory. Down to 3 seconds. Here's the snap. Hold is down. Kick on the way. And it is good. And Matt Prater, in his first game as a Buffalo Bill, has won the ball game here in week one. The Bills were down by 15 in the fourth quarter. They come all the way back to win the game at the gun with a 32-yard field goal for a 41-40 victory.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, the final season opener at Highmark Stadium will not be forgotten by anybody that watched it. Happy Buffalo Bills Football Monday. Happy Victory Monday. You might have been celebrating Victory Monday on the drive home because it was a late night. Jeremy and Joe, good morning, everybody. Buffalo Bills Football Monday is brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
For many, it was a late night.
Yes.
Not for everybody. It wasn't a late night.
That's right. Some went to bed?
That's right.
You went to bed?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
I feel like we're not allowed to.
No. I leave at halftime to make sure I don't get stuck there until 2 o'clock in the morning, knowing right. I got to get up for the show the next morning.
Right.
So I left at halftime. But after that game, I'm sitting in bed like, I'm not sleeping right now. I was wired. So I went down and played a quick game of NCAA football, just destroyed some hapless soul at 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's after the win? You were too wired after the win?
After the win, yeah. Just went downstairs, did that, went back up, went to bed. Listened to Josh Allen talk, Sean McDermott a little bit as well, which is what I'm sure many did in their cars. So yeah, I got to bed eventually.
One thing about this game, there's a million things, and our phone lines are open at 803-0550 here on a Bills Football Monday. You know, when they win a game, sometimes people will have a complaint or something to say, and it'll be a situation where someone hears a person complaining and says, what are you guys worried about? They won the game. This is a game where there's not a soul alive that didn't complain along the way.
Oh,
there's
sure.
not your hard, most hardcore Bills fan that doesn't want to talk about, you know, this not being good or this not being good was ready to fire somebody at 41-25 or maybe at 17-7. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a game that tested everyone. And they win it. And if you're Baltimore, you're just, you know what you're thinking if you're Baltimore? You know what that looked like, by the way, everybody?
Yeah.
That was a Chiefs win.
That, oh, yeah.
That was a what?
Yeah.
They won that game.
Mm-hmm.
The other team, their brains melted. And the Bills won this game.
Mm-hmm.
It bounces off of Dawson Knox into a diving Keon Coleman's arms. They missed an extra point. What?
Mm-hmm.
Who fumbled? Derrick Henry on the way to a career day, maybe 500 yards. He fumbled,
mm-hmm.
and they win.
They miss an extra point.
along the way also. If they don't miss an extra point. I mean, the Bills, you know, miss some two-point conversions, and I've got a lot to say about that eventually. But
I'm so,
the extra point is why they don't get overtime.
That's right. I'm so excited that we don't have to talk about two-point conversion, not just execution, but decisions the whole day. Felt like they would have lost the game if they don't get the ball back and the Ravens run out the clock. It's, oh, they lost by 2 points and they missed 3 two-point conversions. It would have been just like nonstop two-point conversion talk.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what? What do you say? I mean, Josh Allen carries them, engineers a comeback win, rushes for 2 touchdowns, throws for 2 touchdowns. Lamar throws for 2 touchdowns. Lamar runs all over them. Henry runs all over them. And it was a show. And getting home and watching the second half like you did, I also did, on the television, the Bills are getting destroyed. And Collinsworth's talking about it like it's a great game. I'm thinking, this is not a great game. This is a beatdown, and the Bills are...
Yeah.
You know what it looked like? It was like last year's Bills-Lions game, where the one team was out too far in front, and the trailing team was not supposed to ever be able to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. And they won. What do you say?
Josh Allen, man.
Josh Allen,
right? There's some luck along the way. I think the Ravens made some mistakes. I think I saw a lot on Twitter last night that Ravens fans are after Harbaugh because he does this all the time. There are stats about how often this happens. It happens to the Ravens more than it happens to anybody, that they lose this way. I mean, there's more fun things about the Bills to get to, but what are you doing punting that football on 4th and 2?
I know.
You've got the most elusive quarterback in the history of the sport. Like, was not every Bills fan, the moment that punter came onto the field to give them a chance to drive down the field and kick a field goal, instead of going for it on 4th and 2, where even like they debated on the broadcast, Chris Collinsworth was on the broadcast saying, I think you go for this. I mean, the color analyst on a national football broadcast was like, yeah, go for it. In his own territory,
Then
the reason why you wouldn't, I guess, is, and why they didn't, is the Bills are in field goal range if you do not get it.
All the more reason to go for it.
But
actually, it's all the more reason to go for it if you're Baltimore, because your enemy, there's 1:33 left. Your enemy is not just the field goal. It's that they need to use more clock to get the field goal.
Right.
You'd love them to only need 38 yards.
Yeah.
Because then you can stop. All right, we'll get another chance maybe. Of course they should have gone for that.
And again, like, the real point, though, is everybody, I would think, everybody in the stadium when the punter came on the field had a sigh of relief. Thank you. Thank you for not. That's how I felt.
Yep.
I felt they're punting. Yes. Like, amazing that they're punting. And if the opponent is, like, cheering when your punter comes on the field, you know you've made the wrong decision.
Not just a sigh of relief. You probably sat up in your chair and thought, I'm about to watch my team win this game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, is there any doubt they're going to get in range? I'm going to stop Josh Allen, giving him 4 downs and the license to, we'll take my first snarky shot here, not throw screens all day. He's going to actually try to win the game.
Right.
He's going to go down the field. He's going to run. He's going to throw. And sure enough, like, that's what happened.
And not to make this all about the Ravens, but, like, they there's that mistake. And then, I don't know how much this has been brought up, or if anybody has brought it up. The Bills don't have any timeouts. Keon Coleman, they're showing ESPN right now. He gets tripped up, right? Like, one, not on that corner, like, to know, like, hey, it's probably good to let him score at that point, but good that Coleman doesn't score.
Of course.
But now the clock's ticking. And what is there, 35 seconds on the clock? And the Bills don't have any timeouts. You can't stop the clock. You know, you cannot. You have 3 timeouts, and they have, you know, you'll call a timeout. You have 2 timeouts. They'll have 3 plays. You can't stop the Bills from running the clock down. So at that point, all you're doing by calling timeout is giving the Bills time to get organized and figure out what they're supposed to do here.
Mm-hmm.
Why call timeout? Make them go to the line of scrimmage and have Allen have to figure it out in the huddle. So again, like, just little things like that where that happened on the other side. McDermott would be getting lambasted this morning. He did not do that last night. Not to say that their defense was great, and, you know, if they shut him down, he deserves his flowers. They didn't do that.
They did not do that.
But the coach on the other side made way more mistakes last night than the Bills coach did.
Mm-hmm.
Way more mistakes.
803-0550. So much to get to. Derrick Henry ran through the Bills like a hot knife through butter. It was no contest for him until he fumbled.
Till he fumbled.
The Bills defense did what it did a lot last year, which is, I mean, it actually looked much, much worse, but made two plays, three plays when they needed it. Bosa poking out a fumble on Justice Hill. That keeps one drive to three instead of seven.
Yep.
The fumble for Henry, of course, another one. Like,
I mean, three plays were at it. Did Ed Oliver end three drives himself?
Oliver was amazing the whole night.
That's the Ed Oliver game.
Yep.
That's the best game he's ever played as a Bill.
Yeah. And they gave up 40.
That's I tweeted that last night. Like, is it possible that Derrick Henry had his best game ever against the Bills while Ed Oliver also had his best game as a Bill at the same time? Because I think that's what happened last night.
Mm-hmm. Well, get some calls in and your reactions to, you know, all of it. They won the game. It's hilarious.
They won the. We just have to say it enough times today. Like, they won that game.
Yeah,
they won that game. There's many people. I think my dad might be one of these people. I don't know that. Don't know right now they won the game.
You're still asleep?
They're asleep, thinking they lost.
Yeah.
Think that would be a few people. A few people.
Yeah. Good morning. The Bills won the game. Mike in Connecticut.
Maybe we just informed you.
Yeah, right. Mike in Connecticut is leading us off. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Wow, what a game.
Yeah.
I think the first thing I want to say is it feels so good to be on the other side of one of these game of the years.
Yep.
I think for the last 4 years, whether it was Arizona,
Minnesota,
Philly, insane. I think it is awesome to finally be on the other side. One thing I want to say about whether it's McDermott, special teams, I'm always a fan of don't take points off the board. I understand, like, penalty on the extra point, you know, you get it at the one. But if we did not get the ball back, there's those going for two several times would have came back to bite us. Two other things I just want to say really quick. We didn't hear his name much, but I think it was one of those things when you don't hear anything that's good is Dorian Strong. He was just sound. Obviously, he had the penalty early, but overall sound performance. The moment was not too big. I think there's a genuine concern at the safety position. I think we all know that, but I do think that it can't get worse than where it's at. So I can only hope that there is a growth. And is it wide receiver one season?
What do you mean?
For Coleman?
Yeah. I'm saying Keon Coleman.
I mean, he was great down the stretch.
But he was great at being there and being a – Jerry Ostrowski referred to him as a trash man, cleaning up the trash, like catching. He caught a third down play where Allen scrambles. It depends. Like, what do you mean by wide receiver one season? It's 6'14". If I start talking about receiver after they scored 41 points, people will get me fired. But no one on this team got open the whole game.
All right.
All of their good plays, Allen extends plays to give his receivers time to get open. That's what that offense was. On the broadcast, Collinsworth was so confused by their offense that he didn't realize that what he said made no sense. And maybe if you're watching this game, Collinsworth said during the game that he thought Josh Allen was feeling pressure that wasn't there, and because of that was getting flushed from the pocket. And he I think he's got more time than he realizes. Maybe he does. Allen was scrambling to give the receivers more time to get open. That's what that was.
Yeah.
All day. No one could get separation. No one could get open. And if Allen runs around, well then, all right, the zone opens in spots and maybe a receiver can break free. Like, Keon Coleman had a nice day. At one point in the game, it was the Bills' two leading receivers had a combined two catches for like 9 yards.
Yeah.
And this is late in the game. They couldn't get the ball to receivers at all, and then they just could because Josh Allen works magic. So it's a great kind of performance from Coleman. It's exactly the kind of player he can be, which is a little dangerous after the catch, win a couple of one-on-ones. I mean, his touchdown was a stroke of luck, but whatever. Like, take it. So good for him.
Big play at the end to set them up for the field goal.
Palmer,
that might have been his best one of the game.
Yeah, Palmer, a big play at the end. Other than that, you know, like, man, the story of the game, I mean, Josh Allen's amazing. Josh Allen is able to just lift everybody up. James Cook had their most explosive play that kind of got that game going as well, which was good to see because Cook is an explosive player. It's Allen and Cook and Coleman. Kincaid had maybe his best game in a while in terms of contributions, big catches for him, touchdown for him. Yeah.
Jackson Hawes getting in on the show. Jackson Hawes.
Yeah.
That's when it was getting stupid. Yeah. Like, right. Wait, who? Hawes caught it to the one?
That's how it's a Chiefs game.
Why is he even out there?
It's a Chiefs win. Mahomes threw it to who?
Yeah, right.
When did he join the team? Mike in Tonawanda. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Question. So at this point, what do we do with Prater after the Bass comes back? Because I don't know about you guys, but I didn't find myself holding my breath at all whenever Prater went out there to kick a ball. I find myself doing that with Bass a lot. And I know Bass is younger, but, I mean, kickers, man, their legs usually last forever, you know? And I don't know what Bass's contract is. And especially if you saw the videos last night afterwards, they were giving Prater a lot of love. You know, he already seemed like he's fitting right in. You know, so what do we do here? I know we can't keep Prater on the practice squad forever because somebody's going to want to take him off soon. So what do we do once Bass comes off IR?
You know, I mean, I don't know. Today, he made the winning kick, but it was very short, right? Good for him. He made a 43-yarder. He goes 3 for 3. He makes his extra points. So perfect day for him. I don't know. Today's the day for this. Maybe this is in a month when Bass is getting closer. Maybe a few more Prater games. But at some point, I'll want to talk about that. I wasn't worried. He is. I looked up over the weekend in the last three seasons from 50 plus, from 40 to 49, from 30 to 39, from 20 to 29, and from extra points. Prater is a better percentage than Tyler Bass. So that was one area where, like, oh, I don't know, man. He just got here on Thursday. I didn't feel any more nervous. Like, I felt they had statistically a better kicker on the field.
Well,
for
if I could psychoanalyze, the reason you don't feel nervous about Prater is because he had never let you down before.
True.
And Bass had missed
kicks.
And it
was a 20. What even was the distance on the last one?
It was a chip shot. Yeah, it was very makeable.
Did you see in the moment Kyle Hamilton? Or did you see after the fact Kyle Hamilton?
How close he was?
Yeah. I saw it in the moment. And I don't know how many other people did. Like, heart stopped. Like, oh, they didn't block him. And I didn't see this until after, like, the freeze frame after, that he was an inch from blocking that field goal. I think Deion Walker was the one who just forgot to block him. Mm-hmm. And he came in unscathed, jumped up, and just missed the kick.
Well, to the
it was almost the stupidest loss.
That is what I was thinking.
One of the stupidest losses.
As he's lining up for the kick, my thought is, well, the only way this game could get actually dumber is if this kick gets blocked.
And it came as close as humanly possible.
Thank goodness it didn't, because we would have had another epic game of all time. The Bills come out on the wrong end of it, and what if?
Right. Great execution at the end, though, on that.
Yes. Well done.
Clock is ticking, getting it off with like 2 seconds left, so the clock hits zero. Again, Harbaugh, thank you for the timeouts, getting everybody organized.
Who else executed a kick like that on opening weekend? The Chiefs did. The Chiefs did that before the half.
I was so mad at that.
Before the half in Brazil, and all you saw was expert coaching. This is a well-coached team. What did the Bills do? The Bills executed a kneel down, calmly walk out. That clock's ticking. Prater is walking as calmly.
Oh, that dude is so cool.
As calmly as you could possibly be. Yeah. I thought, shouldn't you run out there and get in position?
Nah, he's like walking. He was strutting out on the field.
19, I got 18, this. 17. Like, Matt, buddy, you got to get your spot.
He's like the superhero in an action movie walking away from the explosion behind him.
That's right.
Basically.
Mo in New Jersey up next here on Buffalo Bills Football Monday, a Victory Monday. Hey, Mo.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy Victory Monday. And I'm happy to be saying it's a Victory Monday. I still can't figure out how we won that game. And to your point, you know, we're always on the wrong side of these game of the years. You know, you talk about it year in, year out, oh, game of the year, and here we are, we lost. Like, it's the worst game of my life. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm glad we won it. You know, I really hated the decision. I was watching the game with my daughter, and I said, I hate taking points off the board. I'm just one of those people. You made the extra point, take the extra point. You're going to be chasing that point for the rest of the game, which we were. And we're fortunate enough that the kicker on the Ravens side, he missed the kick. So it kind of, you know, gave us the opportunity to win it at the end of the game, so rather than pushing it into overtime. I wouldn't have survived if it went into overtime. But that defensive performance, like, I don't want to be the negative Nelly in the room right now, but that defensive performance really has me concerned. Definitely the Ed Oliver game for sure. Like, if he can play like that for the rest of the season, I won't be concerned so much about the defensive line, but our secondary, our safeties, we talked about it all preseason. I just, they were lost back there, taking wrong angles, couldn't make tackles. Now, I know Derrick Henry is one of one, when it comes to, you know, trying to tackle a guy like that. But the safeties were just lost. Like, and I don't know what the answer is at this point in the season, right? But we have who we have. They need to figure it out. And I'm not a DeMar Hamlin guy, but he's always in the right spot, at least. You know, maybe he knows where to be. I'm not going to pretend like I know how to fix it, but, you know, I really hope they can fix this defense and that offensive performance for the ages. Josh Allen, I've never seen a quarterback do what he's done. You guys said it. He makes the wide receivers get open. Up until that fourth quarter, our guys were just not getting open. Their secondary, the Ravens' secondary is really good, but just they couldn't get open. And then just, they came alive in the fourth quarter. Josh Allen does what he does. Couple of amazing throws, especially the one down the left sideline on that last drive to Palmer. Like, I mean, I couldn't believe what I was watching. And you want to talk about when you knew you had a chance? That's when I knew we really had a chance. Like, I know, okay, we had the ball. We have a chance to win. When he made that throw, I'm like, this is it. And, you know, they went down there, got the field goal. Bills win. Gone to the Jets. Let's go.
The thing about, like, Bishop trying to tackle Derrick Henry – if Derrick Henry has made it that far into your defense untouched, there are few humans ever that would actually bring him down. You can't be upset with Bishop for not getting him to the ground there, because it's an actually impossible task to ask full speed, okay, jump in front of the freight train and slow it down. Like, you know, it's not going to work. So the failures come up front. Like, whether that's however Baltimore schemed it and got it and knew that the Bills' run defense, where it was going to be vulnerable. You know, the L-22 will tell the tale, and people that break that down, whether it's run fits or fundamentals or communication on defense or Deion Walker or whatever it might be. Like, they got run on in a way that Sean McDermott defenses never get run on, even though they invite the run. I'm trying to think, like, the most rushing yards they ever gave up was 190 against the Saints in a Tyrod game.
Yeah, and I remember that game. They ran 30 times in a row.
Yeah, and since then, what? And even
against this guy. They've done, they've managed. He's got his big runs here and there, but there haven't been many games where it's just every time he touched the ball, you felt like, oh, they got no shot.
Yeah.
And they did get there at the end, but even at the end, how'd they get him? It was the lineman. They didn't let him get to the second and third level. Because, right, Bishop couldn't stop him when he got in front of him, and Taylor Rapp just couldn't get in front of him at all. How about Collinsworth going after Taylor Rapp, by the way, on that run? Like, you need better safety play than this. This dude just not even coming close to getting in front of him. And he even had the stat on. He's a 4.7 safety, which I did not know, by the way. I did not know before last night that Rapp had a slower 40 time than Ed Oliver. But he didn't. Henry, though, just like, I mean, some of those plays, you can't have a game like that. There are always going to be a few plays where it's like, throw your hands up. Like, I think he's the greatest running back I've ever seen, in my life, at least. There's nobody like him. He's at this age, and he's not any slower, by the way.
He's 31 and doing this.
Marcus Mosher had a stat on Henry last night that he is 600 yards away from matching his career high school stats.
Yeah.
He's not even at that. Yeah, like, this dude has always been a freight train, and he still is. They play him next time. They're going to have to – it's going to have to look way more like the playoff game. They're not going to win that game ever when he's having that type of performance. 10 yards a carry.
Yeah. Buffalo Bills Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. If you're on hold, stick with us. If you're not, there's a spot for you. Bills win. And we're streaming on YouTube. You can make a comment in there.
The chat on a Victory Monday.
The chat on a Victory Monday. It's already saucy. That's how it goes. Open phone lines for you as well. Sal, later. I don't know when. I'm going to kind of let him wake up. It's a late night. Chris Brown, well, his spot is locked in, 8:30. It's all part of Victory Monday here on WGR.
Allen back to pass, looking over the middle, and he's got him in the end zone for a touchdown. It's Dalton Kincaid.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On the defense, Larry in South Florida called before the break. I think we have to, or we should, give I know it's not easy to give the defense some grace here, but they are missing four regular players. Ogunjobi and Hoyt, who we don't know how they will affect this defense yet. Hairston, we also don't know much about him yet. He got hurt. We'll see when he comes back.
Right.
Trey White. Okay, this version of Trey White, we don't exactly know yet. But those are four pieces that we thought would be regular pieces to this defense. And young players, Deion Walker, TJ Sanders. Like, all right, give them a little. So I'm up to six pieces that the what they are right now, I don't know if those six pieces are the same six assets in 4 months, 3 months, two months even. So it doesn't mean I know that it's going to get better. But you did play the toughest team you're probably going to play offensively without knowing what those pieces are really going to be. So it's not good the way the defense played, but I got to kind of hang my hat on that a little bit, that it's a work in progress from a personnel standpoint and from the player development standpoint.
Yeah, that is one way to do it. I mean, if you really look at it, though, in terms of like who plays the most, they only were missing one starter, right? Like if you were to play Baltimore in a playoff game, how many different starters would you have? Just the outside corner. Everybody else would be the same?
I think Michael Hoyt is
he's playing more than Rousseau or Bosa.
I think he is as rotated in as almost anybody in that
so
group.
Hoyt would be maybe like another one.
I think Hoyt is a significant piece of what they plan to do.
Okay. Because I don't know that it's enough. I mean, I got a lot of guys that were on the field on that Sunday that are going to be out there on the field again. Like this, I think last year they were missing more with you know, Baylen Spector is playing and Cam Lewis is playing and Jamarcus Ingram is playing and Cole Bishop is playing. Like, I had four or five starters last year different, I think, from the regular season game to the playoff game.
Isn't Hoyt one of the most likely to see a lot of snaps against Baltimore? That opponent
specific. That type of player?
That specific opponent. I mean, a guy that's listed as an end that can play linebacker, that can, I mean, again, we joke about nickel corner sometimes. Isn't he exactly the player they're going to use a lot against Baltimore?
Yeah, because they're going to move him around and he's going to play something. He might even play defensive tackle sometimes. Will he be the third linebacker at times?
Very possible.
Yeah, like, I don't know what that's going to look like. Like, he's. Yeah, it's very questionable. Because even in the preseason, they really just used him as an edge rusher, right?
Yeah.
But that's preseason. That's not the chess piece. You don't want to give away how you plan on using him in the first place.
Is he a little bit... I mean, Bosa didn't play a poor game. He got caught a couple times by Lamar, right?
Yeah, he came close.
Does Hoyt become better at that, setting the edge?
He helps you against Henry more than he helps you against Lamar.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning him, at least, you know, as a guy that would be in there.
That's right.
So they're missing a bunch of pieces. But then again, there are also pieces in there you might be concerned about. The safeties. I mean, those were the safeties.
And I don't want Henry getting to the second level, the third level, really. But those two just looked... It's Henry, right? Like, it's Derrick Henry. He might be the best running back who's ever lived.
It's Henry.
But, man, they just didn't even come close.
You had two highlights, and the Bishop one looks worse. I think the rap one's worse.
The rap one's worse. The Bishop one, maybe once in a while, he finds a way to slow him down so somebody else can catch him up.
Right.
Rap isn't even putting a hand on him.
No, rap, bad angle. Just gets torched on that play. Johnny in Buffalo. Hey, Johnny, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, it was just awesome watching that game the other night after having like 24 hours to kind of decompress. You just learn to appreciate and love Josh Allen even more. You know, I know we all love Allen, but what he did the other night was just absolutely spectacular, just the way he kept plays alive, the throws he made in timely situations. You know, I think the only thing we can really be frustrated on is obviously some of the play calling in the first half when you kind of want the ball in his hands every single play. And it's just, he just appears so dialed in, and he's taken that next step in his game where he's just really beginning to kind of become one of those elite guys before the pre-snap, making pre-snap reads, really understanding what the defense is doing. We saw it on that Cook screen. We saw it on that throw to Keon. He's checking plays at the line. He's making signals. And it's just, it reminds me of the way that, you know, the Bradys and the Mannings did things as they progress in their careers. And it's just awesome to watch. When it comes to the defense, I agree with you, Jeremy. It's just, this defense is going to look, I think, vastly different come playoff time with these added pieces back, with more rotational players. You know, we played the toughest opponent I think we're going to play all season. Like, top to bottom roster-wise, they're by far, I think them and the Eagles have the most talent on their roster. You know, defensively, it's just going up against, you know, Malachi Starks, Nate Wiggins, Marlon Humphrey. It's crazy, the guys that we go against, Jair Alexander, and we don't have, and we still talk about our lack of kind of weapons, yet we still got the victory. It's just, I kind of went into that game almost expecting to lose, because we make the adjustments come playoff time. You can kind of adjust your defense more then to say, okay, we really need to stop Lamar in this rushing game, but you're not going to change what you do fundamentally during the regular season. It's just kind of what every coach has done, and that's why the Ravens have so much success regular season-wise. But it's like watching Allen just it was awesome to see, and I can't get enough of it, man. It's just like I want to watch highlights over and over, and I just – the only other thing I think we're going to need by the end of the season, and I know, you know, you might not agree with me because you're – I'm team wide receiver too, but that safety position, man, it could become a problem. It's not great to look at. Rapp doesn't look great. Hamlin's not great. Bishop's okay. He's learning. Hopefully he gets better. But the lack of general athleticism at that position, I think it might come back to hurt us. And obviously we're hoping our D-line doesn't give quarterbacks too much time and we can make, you know, get some pressure. But we need a playmaker back there at safety. And I know they don't grow on trees, but to me, that position is the most glaring need that we have right now, because we have Allen who can really command that offense. But on defense, Ed Oliver's been that was the star, but I need a guy playing safety who gives me some confidence, at least a guy like maybe we had when we had Hyde and Poyer back there. That was amazing. Just give me one of those types. But other than that, love Josh.
Thanks, Johnny. On the safety position, I mean, like when we got to draft day and we had one day we flirted with the idea of Malachi Starks, like I was on board for that idea, or somebody at the safety position. Bishop has the athleticism. You're talking about an athletic safety. Like, Bishop is definitely athletic enough for the position. The interesting thing about this defense is, you say, like, these players come back. I don't want you to confuse it with I'm predicting they will be great by the time they get to the playoffs. I definitely don't know. I just got to give a little bit of grace for a grace period here for McDermott and Babbage to kind of put it together. You know, you have games where you just don't play well. You have a lot of new pieces. You're feeling it out, whatever. Will the safety position be a problem the whole year? Maybe against some teams, yes. Maybe against the Jets, it won't. Maybe against the Saints, it won't. But there might be times during the year. You know, like we're constantly talking about this team in the moment and also looking to when we know it's going to count. And by then, who knows who's healthy? I saw some suggesting the Bills should call Jabril Peppers today.
I saw a lot of tweets about him during the game.
I don't know if they're going to do that.
In part because I think what people saw from Rapp was a lack of athleticism in that game. And everyone was, this guy is super, super athletic. Jabril Peppers for the position. So, I mean, maybe they bring him in later in the year. I don't know if he would start right away. Like, I think these are probably your starting safeties. If it's going so poorly that, like, even they sound like, man, we might make a move at this position, then that's a deadline move, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a deadline move. I don't think they're moving on from these two safeties in the next, like, 3 weeks. And I don't think they play, kind of like you said, I don't think they play opponents that are going to make them get benched in the next 3 weeks. And they're not going to bench Rapp, right?
No.
He could look as bad as possible, and I don't think they'll bench him. He has looked as bad as possible. They still talk like they like him.
I mean,
he was a worse graded safety than DeMar Hamlin last year. Who's the guy that's playing? Right. Rapp.
PFF pretty much hated the Bills safeties the entire season, but you don't have to trust PFF. It's up to, you know, it's up to you out there if you want to do that. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Bills over the Ravens, and Baltimore is, who do they play this week?
Good question. I have no idea. They play the Chiefs in 3 weeks.
They get the Browns, the Lions, the Chiefs, the Texans, the Rams, and then the Bears.
All right, that's
not easy.
That's not easy.
We'll see if the Browns are going to be scrappy this year. Matt on a cell phone. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So just a couple of things. First of all, like, the wide receiver argument, like, with regards to Buffalo, I, like, go back and forth with it. Yeah, like, I mean, would it be great to have a guy that can get separation? Yeah, we had that once. He turned out to be a diva. He went on his way. But, like, Allen threw for, what, 390, like, over 300 yards on, like, wide receivers that everybody ate. So, I mean, that's, like, just my point about the wide receivers. I don't have a problem with the offense.
Quick
defense,
thing, Matt, hold on. Not disputing. I've had a little fun with this because everybody ate. When you throw for 394, it's hard for everyone not to eat. There was a graphic, Nate Geary from WGR here, on pregames with Nate, you hear him all the time. He posted a graphic of all the Bills receivers and the numbers they put up. And I would just like to point out that the numbers from that game, if you did go for the pace, Keon Coleman is having a 1,900-yard season, and I promise you, like, that is not, you know, like, that's a conversation.
No,
I'm not, it's not even a dispute. It's one of these moments where it's like, you know, we could argue all we want about how they build it, but if he puts up 1,900 yards, let's decide right now, line up, folks, you give him $35 million or not, you know, because those are big numbers.
No, I hear you, but, like, the secondary and stuff, like, I want to ask you guys this, like, I understand that the safeties look awful.
Yeah.
So would you bring up Poyer to, like, tandem with one of the two, or leave those two just as they are?
Well, thanks, Matt. That's been the question. Like, on pregame with Sal, he suggested the first guy in might be if they were going to make a change there. Like, the Bills are doing their evaluation of their tape, and this went right and this went wrong. I have no idea how close they are to making a move there. I don't think it's time to do it right now, but whatever. The first name Sal brought up was Cam Lewis. Not Damar Hamlin. It was Cam Lewis being back there. And then during training camp, it was, could Jordan Hancock be in the mix?
Mm-hmm.
And now I got Poyer. I have
Poyer signed.
I have options. There's no shortage of options on what the Bills could decide to do there. Whether or not Poyer can still play, that's up for debate. So you could add somebody else to the mix. I don't know. I don't exactly think that they are going to, or even should, overreact to this game, this opponent.
Yeah.
What Baltimore did to quick count them on the Bishop blitz where he's 13 yards from the line of scrimmage. Maybe he should make a different read there once that happens. I don't know. How eager do you think they are to make a change? I think they'll give Bishop and Rapp as a pair weeks. Weeks. It'll take something significant to go wrong back there, I think, with a deep pass to be a problem.
It's also like, when would you bench him? Just like whenever? Like, would you bench him like right before like a game against the Chiefs? Would you wait till after the Chief game so that they don't get a look at whoever you're going to start against them in the playoffs? Like, when do you want to bench him? I don't know. Like, I wonder how much I'll warm up to the idea of just throwing Poyer in there at some point during the course of the season. If it looks as bad as it did against the Ravens. I also don't expect that it'll look as bad as it did against the Ravens against these opponents. So I feel like it might quiet down a bit on the safeties in the next couple of weeks, in the next month. I hope so, at least. I mean, that's the thing about that position. They give up one bomb over the top against anybody. It's going to be, you got to get this guy out of there. And same, I don't know how close they are to moving on from either one of those two out of the starting lineup. I mean, Bishop, McDermott did say, like, we're looking for the starter opposite of
we're looking for someone.
Rapp, yeah, someone yeah. 2 weeks ago?
It was not long ago, yeah.
Like it was two, not that long ago.
2-3 weeks ago.
So, like, I don't know what their bar is for. Like, you got to show us something. At some point, we won't just leave you in there all year if you're not doing the right things or you're not making a difference when they do have, I don't know if you want to call them great, they're not great options, but you have options.
803-0550. Thanks for the phone call. We have open phone lines, more your calls. When we return, the offense had a nice day. It is worth pointing out how we would talk about the Bills if they finished on 25 points instead. Which they were a Dawson Knox deflected pass away from maybe ending on 25 points. And then Coleman has one less touchdown and 50 less yards. But hey, whatever. Like, the results are the results. They got their win. Coleman made some big plays for them down the stretch because they got the opportunity to. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. When we get back, it's something else for you here I wanted to mention and tease for you. Because, an update on that Bears thing. On the Manning cast, because we're back to the Manning cast time of year. Good points brought up on the Manning cast.
I saw, did you see who they tried to get on the show?
No.
That they failed to? The Pope. Peyton Manning tried to get the Pope
they
on the show.
Actually tried to get the Pope.
He said he wrote a letter to the Pope trying to get him on because he's from Chicago for the Bears game.
That's right. The Pope's a Bears fan? We found that out?
He is a Bears fan. So he tried. I guess it didn't work.
All right.
He failed on that.
I'm kind of curious to see, you know, where we move as an offensive unit. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we could, you know, Josh Allen could build some more confidence with his new receiving corps.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, the new receiving corps, they all have different things that they excel at. Palmer did a nice job getting open on that 30-yard gain on the final drive.
Mm-hmm.
Coleman, again, he got tripped on the play, but you start to see he's such an interesting receiver, Coleman is, because he's so good after the catch,
mm-hmm.
which is not, I don't know, Joe, how many guys ever have been not good at separating from their man, but then when they have the ball in their hands, they're very good at separating from their man. You know, like he gets away from people and he's strong and he's tough to bring down. So Coleman has his strengths, no doubt about it. And I don't know if we should be expecting 8 for 112 every week. That's a game where the numbers kind of get crooked because of the circumstances. But you know, he was what they needed him to be. He drew a penalty or two. He comes up with a big third down. Like, he was super important to what they did, and there's no doubt Allen looks for him. And sometimes when he doesn't look for him, Coleman, it's a testament to him, right, that he's always finding Allen. Go back to that touchdown against the Jets last year that's intended for Ty Johnson, and then this one that's deflected. Coleman is finding his way back to his quarterback. That's for sure, even when the quarterback's not looking for him.
That's definitely true. I mean, these plays where he's scrambling around, those are Gabe Davis plays from back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, when Allen is buying time, who's the guy that's heading downfield? He's trying to, you know, mesh with where his quarterback is going because half the field's going to get taken away. And Davis was very good at that. And Coleman, you had a couple of those plays last year. There was the one against the Lions. Remember where Josh got rocked on the play and Coleman had gone over there and like headed down the field and it was like a 50-yard gain?
Yeah.
Him being that guy, I mean, because really, once he gets out into that open space, he's the guy I do want with the ball in his hands. If he could, and that was something Davis would catch in those areas and then that was it. Like, he would fall down there or he'd get tackled immediately. And Coleman, I'd like to think, can create more than that. They tried to get him worked in, by the way, in screens a little earlier, but he just dropped it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a play. That's a player I'd rather throw that screen to. They're throwing to tight ends on some of these plays. If you're going to run them, and ideally don't do it on 3rd and 6, I mean, Coleman might be my favorite idea for that right now.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yesterday, I'm just driving. Like, what if they went 17-0? What if they just went 17-0?
There we go.
And like, hey, if they went 20-0 and won the Super Bowl, like, are they on par with the Chiefs? Because they might have three, but I've got the perfect season. And now we're like that's almost like winning two.
All this because Dawson Knox deflected a pass to Keon Coleman and kept him in the game.
And Kyle Hamilton jumped like a tenth of a second too late and didn't block a field.
Yeah, I mean, that one to me doesn't really matter much as much. I mean, I know he got close, but the fourth and two, it was a 4th and 2 deflection. It wasn't even, if that pass falls to the ground, they have another play. If Dawson Knox doesn't tip that pass, maybe Shakir catches it. Maybe not. If he tips it any other direction, maybe it's picked off. I want to be a little careful because They were getting hammered in that game.
Yeah.
Somebody wrote me a message on Twitter, maybe. Mo wrote in. I think Baltimore only gave up 40 points because, you know, they're playing Josh Allen and they're pushing, blah, blah, blah. I said, I don't think so. I think Baltimore scored 40 because it was easy for them. It was that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore was running out the clock in the fourth quarter and breaking long runs. You know, the last Henry touchdown to go to 40 was, holy cow, can you believe they really can't stop them? In fact, if Henry doesn't fumble, the Ravens score the next three plays? Maybe, maybe not. The Bills didn't get their punt until the very final possession.
Right.
So anyway, it's all to say it's a great win. It is absolutely all set up for them in the regular season. And it's the kind of game that reminds me what will change our minds or anybody else out there about whether or not they'll do it when it matters. Because 17-0, that sounds great. But 17-0, 16-1, 15-2, if it's the one seed, isn't it all the same? You should put the one seed. Because
right.
17-0 and not winning the Super Bowl would not be really much to hang your hat on. I know no, it's an undefeated
right.
season.
Right.
But, you know, it's just the way that it works.
No, it'd have to come with the Super Bowl. Or else.
Yeah.
It wouldn't really matter.
And if it did, would Josh Allen be the GOAT? Because, I mean, that's the thing I thought about. You're thinking about the Lombardi Trophy?
Man, the debate culture
what I
that they
thought
would
about,
have for a summer if that happened.
What I thought about last night was, do I have to just accept that for the rest of my life, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he has seven Super Bowls? And no player that ever played the game that was, as we all watch, we're like, that guy is the best that I've ever watched play it. He doesn't get to be in the conversation because he has to have seven rings. This was, of course, I'm worth the risk of LeBron and Jordanifying this debate. But LeBron was supposed to never be able to catch Jordan because he wouldn't get his six rings. And he got a bunch.
Yeah, four.
But he didn't get his six.
Right.
And he lost a bunch in the finals, which is incredible to get there with some of the teams he had. But rings culture is that man over there. You may speak to me when you have as many rings as that man over there. And for Brady at seven, it's going to be tough. No one's ever able to get in the room with him on who's the best to ever play.
I'm sorry to inform you that for many, there is one gentleman that could throw his hat in the ring on that, but you're not going to want to have that happen.
Okay.
Because it would be Mahomes.
If the other
does he not already have more than, or is he on par with what Brady had this age if you're just doing it that way?
Probably, but if Mahomes plays the way that he plays the last 2 years and gets to six, is he in the conversation? I guess he has to be. That's what we do.
What we do.
But watching Allen play, how many people would say right now he's the best I've ever watched play the game? Not greatest career, not most accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to say I've never seen anyone better at the position?
I don't hear that much yet, but doesn't mean it's not deserved. How many people could you say that about, though? Like, would
Peyton Manning. I could say it about
Peyton Manning, right? And what is that usually met with? I hear that once in a while. I kind of like that argument the most on who's the greatest quarterback ever. Like, okay, this reason. Like, it's Peyton Manning. Like, if I'm just counting rings, not Peyton Manning. But if I'm doing any, like,
statistical
smart analysis.
He won the most MVPs.
MVPs, like, whatever. Like, it's Peyton Manning. What does that sound like to many? It's, oh, nerd boy likes Peyton Manning. Like, oh, how about you win a couple?
Right.
Like, that's what that sounds like.
Wrap the spreadsheet around your finger.
Right. So is that what Allen is to some extent? I could say he's the greatest I've ever seen play, but I think he's in a group. He's in a group that I would say that about. I would say prime Rodgers and Peyton Manning. Like, there was something about, well, I would put Lamar in that category as well. Like, those might even be my four. Where, like, those guys just look different when they're playing at their peak. And I would have said that about Mahomes for 3 years, but I would not have said that about the last 3 years.
No, it's been different.
So that makes it tough, too. Like, I saw Mahomes look like that, and now I don't see Mahomes look like that. Now I see charts where he's got the second most overthrows in the league over a two-year period. Like, what is that? Is he actually great? Or is the team, whereas Josh is just like, it's undeniable.
Yeah.
Like, he's just doing everything. He's incredible.
So yesterday at Bills practice, McDermott, put it this way, concerned, whatever. He's motivated by what happened in that game against Baltimore. They don't have answers right now for Lamar and for Derrick Henry. And they can't prove that they have answers for Lamar and for Derrick Henry until they play them again. But they can prove their defense is not a complete wet tissue.
Mm-hmm.
They can prove that they don't give up 8 yards per carry. And they went full pads yesterday after a 60-minute game where Ed Oliver says, full pads on a Wednesday after a 60-minute game where we had to play all 60 minutes is a little challenging. It's trying mentally to get yourself back. You're still kind of hurting. You put on full pads, you go out there and you compete because that's who we are. So an intense practice to make sure that they kind of get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You were joking earlier in the week that the Syracuse coach was an idiot for having his players run sprints after a win.
Yeah.
I mean, McDermott's not doing that, but a full padded Wednesday practice after a win.
Yeah.
He's upset with the defense. Unacceptable performance from the defense.
You know, I guess we'll see how different they look, but no one expects them to be the Bengals defense, right?
No.
Like one of the worst in football?
No, I don't think so.
That is how they looked on Sunday, but we've talked about how that's a bad matchup for them, and it's Derrick Henry, and you know, you're missing a couple of pieces. I don't think they're going to be like one of the worst defenses in football. I don't think they have the opponents to be one of the worst defenses in football. And that might be clouding this. Like my question would be, when do we feel like we'll actually know what they are defensively? When will we feel like we have a good grasp on that? Because the Jets, the Dolphins, the Saints, the Patriots, the Falcons, do I have to wait for the Chief game? How much can they do for people and their confidence in the next 5 games to say, no, that was an aberration, or that's what we are against Baltimore, and we got to get better against Baltimore? But you know, against the league, this is not what we are going to be. Or is it possible that they could be like one of the worst defenses in football? Because last year without the turnovers, they might have been that. How bad would they have been last year on defense if they didn't get turnovers?
They're pretty bad. I mean, especially on third down. I mean, the numbers, the rankings were in the 30s.
Horrible.
Anytime you're ranked in the 30s on anything,
right,
that's horrible.
So, like, this year, I guess what I'm asking is, if they are close to the same as what they were on defense last year, but they don't get their turnovers,
then they're in trouble.
How bad is that?
That's pretty bad.
Is that Bengals bad? Is that like bottom 10 bad? Is that bottom 3 bad? Like, it could be really bad, I think.
It could be really good for Josh Allen's statistics.
I mean, it's a great start for his MVP candidacy, 394.
Put up 5,000 yards and 50 total touchdowns if the defense is that bad.
I said before the season, I thought there was no earthly chance that Josh Allen could win MVP for a second year in a row. But if their defense is cooked and he's got to throw for 300 yards every week, a la Burrow, but the Bills make the playoffs and win their division and are like the one seed, then he'll win MVP for a second year in a row. No doubt about it. I don't think they want to be that. I don't know that they'll play offense in a way that exposes that defense. That's one thing that some teams, this is Cincinnati, I'm trying to think of other, Dallas maybe is a little bit like this too, but what do you do when you don't trust your defense? How do you play offense? Because the Bills over time have acted like, oh, we'll slow play things and we'll run the ball and we'll burn the clock. What does Cincinnati do? They don't trust their defense, and what do? Yeah. Air it out. Score 40. And they don't make the playoffs doing that way. If the Bills have a defense that bad, how will they do it? Because I don't think Allen gets the 5,000 yards. I think they probably run the ball a lot to protect their defense.
Maybe. Don't you feel like they're more likely to go into a game like this saying, let's get out in front because we want to – it's different. Baltimore is more pick your poison, right? We say that a lot. The Jets, the Bills are going to want to make them one-dimensional. They're going to want to make them – let's get Fields to drop back. If he only has to drop back 20 times in this game, it's a problem. We want him dropping back 40 times. And the way to get him to drop back 40 times is to score on your first couple possessions, not slow play it, get out in front, make the Jets feel like they have to get away from Breece Hall.
And, right, I was going to say, like, even slow him down a little bit. Breece Hall, like, if you look at his career, some of these are tough because he's played the Bills more than everybody else, but in four games against the Bills, he has 48 carries for 308 yards, averaging 6.4 yards per carry. Add in another 134 yards and a touchdown through the air. Like, of teams he's played multiple times, he's played the Bills about as well as any other team. 6.5 yards per carry. So, you're going to want to keep that to around 4, I think, on top of the score effect of it. So it is a good test to see what they are. Like, was that just Derrick Henry? Because here's another running back that you've struggled with a lot in his career. There were games where I remember coming in injured and would break off like a 50-yard run against the Bills. Big explosive plays. And if they're able to keep him in check, maybe we won't feel great about the whole defense for the playoffs and think like, oh, they stopped the Jets, so I feel good. But if the run defense shows up on Sunday, then okay, that might be like one component of the defense that will feel good.
803-0550. Chris and Engel is going to lead us off here. We'll talk about this defense and what they can do to kind of show us they're not this bad. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So I think, like, if you look at our offense and you break it down, I mean, obviously you could arguably say we have the best quarterback in the whole entire NFL. We have an excellent offensive line. We have good receivers, good running backs, and that's on the offense. If you switch it around to the defense, it's hard to say because how good are they? I know Ed Oliver had an excellent game. I mean, you've got guys like, you know, Russo who can flash time to time, and then you got Bosa who we'll see what happens. I mean, he did some good things, but you know, Bernard and Milano, our safety room, you know, we got, our stud corner and Teron Johnson. So I don't know if defensively they got to work as a cohesive unit because I don't know if we have the talent on defense. I could be wrong. I mean, it's one game, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, you are, Chris. Mm-hmm. What I would say is I remember going way, way back. And looking back, this might not have been correct, but way back in the heat of the drought, one thing I used to say was, don't let the New England Patriots give you a full-on identity crisis. And what I meant by that was, you know, here are who the Bills are. They might be respectably good. New England comes in and whomps them 31-3.
Like, yeah.
Okay, that's a different standard. That's not exactly a peer. They're a cut above. And we might want to start doing that with this defense and Baltimore, where whether it was Joe Marino with us yesterday, I saw John Fina talking about this as well, that the way the Bills are built, they are definitely not built to stop Baltimore. They are built to stop teams that pass it a lot, and they invite the run. And Baltimore is a unique monster of a team that says, oh, we would love to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you invite us to run, we will run right through your face. So that's where the problem comes in. Baltimore didn't even have two of their biggest pieces in the run game in Ricard and Likely. And still, the Bills were getting absolutely shredded in the passing game, or in the running game, and the passing game for that matter. So there's an element of it that says, okay, I know that's troubled. Does that mean I have a full-on identity crisis where no one on my defense is good? Or, which is not what you said, Chris. Like, Oliver played great in this game while they gave up 8 yards per carry, right? Like, that doesn't happen. So it's why this next game might be a perfect test for if they rein in it a little bit. And then the following week, it's Miami. And Miami is not a team you're going to be too worried about running the ball on you. And then it's the Saints. And then it's the Patriots. And now we're kind of back to, all right, regular teams. And let's see how the Bills' defense looks against these regular teams. Now,
because if they struggle against the regular teams, then that's going to not feel good.
If anybody can do whatever they want against this team, which was a little bit of last year. Last year, they got worked.
Yeah.
In multiple games, and they turned it over. You know, seeing some Jets reporters, people that cover the Jets, talking about what happened in their opener,
It's interesting because it's hard not to look at it as the trap, right?
Mm-hmm.
Justin Fields. He has a nice game, and it's maybe this reclamation project can work. And, man, that is just, for me, that's a tough sell. Yeah. The stats on Justin Fields, he, even in that game against the Steelers, took the longest time to throw in the NFL.
Yeah,
I know you might be out there thinking, like, well, yeah, a guy that scrambles and runs around is going to take more time. That's right. He has the ability to extend plays a little bit, maybe a lot of it.
He did it in that game better than you normally see it from him.
Okay.
Like, I watched a lot of that game, and he consistently was getting out of the pocket, finding a guy down the field, making plays with his arm via his feet.
Yeah,
but I've watched him enough to know, like, that's not normal.
That does not last.
Normally, he scrambles to make plays like that and then takes a sack or throws a pick. Like, it doesn't usually look as good as it did against the Steelers.
Yeah, his sack percentage on his NFL career is kind of nuts. And
it's 11.7%.
Yeah, that's insane.
Of his dropbacks.
Yes.
Right? Or he's getting sacked on 12%. Wasn't Allen like 1%?
Yeah, the really good quarterbacks are in the 2% to 3% range.
Okay, right.
It does not happen a lot. So 11%. Let me actually pull up Josh's sack percentage. Yeah, Josh's sack percentage this year is 2%. Last year was 2.8. The year before that, it's 4.
Yeah.
Allen has crossed, in rookie season, he's 8, then 7, then 4-3, 5-4, 2-2. It's one of those spots where sacks are equally on the offensive line as they are on the quarterback. They're also on scheme and system. How fast does the ball come out? Right, you can't sack Mahomes when he's out there dealing too quickly. You can't sack Tua if the ball's out too quickly. But with Fields, it's one of the things about this game that would be very disappointing if, in fact, Ed Oliver is going to miss, which I expect him to miss. He's in a walking boot the 2 days before. I expect him to not play. We'll see. Sean McDermott at 11 o'clock maybe about that. But Oliver, I would have expected, if he had the same game against the Jets that he had against the Ravens, he'd have 4 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Disruptive force, just monster. And maybe Bosa, same way. I know that Fields can escape and can run and can get away a little bit, but he's an escape artist that gets sacked.
Which is impressive almost.
I don't know.
It's impressive in that, like, how do you manage that? You're one of the, is he not, like, just pure athletic traits at quarterback, like as a runner. Is he not second in the league to Lamar? Like maybe just in speed, I should say.
He's up there.
You'd put Allen number two because of his combo of power and size and speed. But
I guess it comes down
Fields
to
Fields is fast.
There are plays when he should have thrown the ball already, and instead
he's
scrambling and he takes a sack.
And that's a thing that I'm growing in appreciation every day. Of these franchise quarterbacks in the league. This is a Caleb Williams conversation, I think, in Chicago right now, too. Tons of sacks. And really, like, what's your processing speed? Like, how, look at, like, how masterful Allen is at that. Like, even pre-snap, this can be true. But then, once the play begins, like, how aware are you of your surroundings? How well are you good at reading what's going on in front of you? And then, how can you translate that to getting rid of the football? And like Justin Fields, that's always been the thing. It's just, I don't know that he knows what's going on around him. That could be pre-snap or post-snap. And
that could be system.
That's true.
It could be it's not optimized. Maybe they give it in a better system.
And that's one of those things where I don't really know. I'm not really sure if you can get a lot better at that over time. Because he was bad at it early, and he didn't really play a lot last year. So maybe he could have gotten a little better at, you know, all of the processing that a quarterback needs to have.
Yeah, he appeared in 10 games. I should pull up his game log from last year because
he didn't start 10 games, though.
No, he started 6.
They would use him on, like, 4th and 2s.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Let's see if I can get, like, how many times he got sacked or sack percentage per game, because that would matter. But one thing he did in the opener, and this is, if you're a Jets fan looking for the Justin Fields reclamation project, to me, this is the number one stat to track, sack percentage. And in one game, it's one game, he cut it down to a perfectly good number. 4.3% of his dropbacks, he was sacked. His previous seasons, 11, 14, 10, 9. He cut it to 4. If he can live with
4%. If he can actually make that happen.
Where's the 4% from? That's from this year?
That's from the Steelers game.
That's from the Steelers.
It's one game.
Right? One game that's with what the I'm Steelers.
Saying. It's one. No, with the Jets against the Steelers.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, okay.
One game, the 4%. Opener. How'd their offense work? Why did it work? An answer, yeah. Because he didn't take sacks to kill their drives. His adjusted net yards per attempt was over 10. Like, he did well. And if he can not take sacks, which is something he has done his entire career to this point, at an elite level, which is the wrong kind of elite level. But if they can figure that out, the reclamation project, the idea of him having the Geno glow up or the Darnold recovery, or, you know, these quarterbacks that find a second opportunity or third, yeah. or fourth. It's going to come down to whether or not he can eliminate those plays, because those are drive killers.
Yeah, usually those guys do that, though, when they leave the Jets, not when they get to the Jets, right? It'd be the opposite if he did the reclamation. Really, what would happen is he'll flame out this year, then he'll go somewhere else, and then he'll figure it out.
Yeah, he is 26, so he's got time.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.